FNR, Football Nation Radio.
Here's Aloisi for a place in the World Cup. He's scored! Australia have got Kennedy! Is that the goal that takes Australia to Brazil? It's a great goal! Charlie Yankov from the Kuhl! Harry Kuhl has done it! Australia's golden boy has come up with a golden goal! Tim Cahill has done it again! What a goal by Tim Cahill!
Club Socceroos with Carlos Alberto Diego. On FNR, Football Nation Radio.
Welcome everyone, live across Australia. You're on FNR, Football Nation Radio, Australia's first and only 24-hour radio station dedicated to the beautiful game of football. I'm Carlos Alberto Diego, and this is one of my favourite times during the week. This is Club Socceroo, where each week we spend time with a Socceroo who's done our country proud. And today, in the studio, my great pleasure to introduce a Socceroo who played 43 times for his country between 1975 and 1981. And of course, I welcome to Club Socceroo, Jim Tansey. Good morning to you, Jim.
Good morning, Carlos. Nice of you to have me here. Thank you.
Mate, you don't look any different from the time I saw you marauding up and down the left side of the Australian national team with the Socceroos or for the Heidelberg team or, you know, Melbourne Slavia. Yep, mate, you don't know that I've been watching you all your career and you don't look any different, mate. You're looking very fit and healthy.
Thank you. The hair has receded a bit, but that happens to a lot of the guys. But enjoying life and work and... shall we say, just loving life at the moment.
South Liverpool, right? You played for South Liverpool, right? Not Liverpool, but South Liverpool. You went for a month's trial at Liverpool under the great Bill Shankly.
Yeah.
Now, why didn't he just sign you up on big money and why didn't you become a European champion and why didn't you go on to play for England? And, you know, Jim, tell us what happened under Bill. Was he a nice man? Did he just say, look, Jim, come back again next week or...?
Absolutely, Carlos. Well, you know, it all started... I signed my first, if you like, part-time professional contract when I was 16 and played... South Liverpool was in the Northern Premier League then. I think it's the conference now, and I was playing to 16, 17. I played for a year and then I read in the paper that Liverpool were interested... And they asked me to go for a month. And at that stage, we're talking the likes of Kevin Keegan, John Toshack, Phil Thompson was one of the juniors coming through.
Ian Callaghan was there.
Peter Thompson on the great Liverpool days.
Emlyn Hughes then?
Emlyn Hughes. Yeah. Emlyn was there, yes. And Liverpool had this belief that everybody trains together. So on the Friday, I was, I'll use the word masquerading as my job, was a burglar alarm technician. Don't ask any questions. Anyway. And on the Monday, you're training with Kevin Keegan. And to be honest, I was a bit shell-shocked. Mm. And that's why I admire the guys who go to the UK, such as Tim Cahill, Harry Kuehl, who go overseas and they have the mental approach. I'm not sure if I had that. Mm. I'm not sure if I had that to say, I'm as good as these, I can do it. I was a bit overawed, sitting in Kevin Keegan's car, going to Anfield was getting, the restaurant was being remodeled. So we went to Anfield for our lunch and stuff like that. And basically overawed. I played a few games. I enjoyed them for the A-team. And at the end of the day, I was called into Bill Shankly's office and it was, thank you, but... thank you sort of thing. And I can only, at that stage, the highlight of my career was being sacked by Bill Shankly. I was not sacked by a B-team coach or reserve. I was sacked by Bill Shankly. And I went, oh, that was pretty good, you know.
Did he actually, once he delivered the news, sit down and talk to him about football or, you know, what you needed to get better? Or did he actually give you any inkling about why
I think
couldn't make the team?
I think Bill pulled out the personnel manual and got it over with and got the bad news over with in the first 30 seconds. And I'm really busy picking the team for Saturday, so could you get out now? You know?
Look,
I told him I admire him. He'd done a great job. I wish him and his family all the best and away you go, you know, and you get on with life. But at that stage, I must be honest, I sort of went, well, I'm not going to make it as a professional footballer, which obviously was a mistake because, one, there's 90 other clubs in the league at the moment, and two, that's where you have to fight. That's where you have to have to dig down deep. And then things followed on from there about you make life-changing decisions. You know, all of a sudden you come to a corner, you come to a bend, and you have to make a decision. And I did that with coming to Australia.
Your dad, Jim Senior, played for Everton, though.
Yeah.
And he was a really good player for Everton. Why wasn't that on the radar? Okay, Liverpool doesn't want me. Father, son, I'll go to Everton. Surely you would have been welcome with open arms.
I think in them days, you know, things are vastly different in the way of picking selection. And I wasn't asked, so I didn't sort of go. And some players mature later, which I think I definitely did and realised. But that stage I went back to playing part-time professional and having a job as well. But my dad did play, and I've got lots of... My dad played 150, 170 games for Everton first team, which is now obviously a well-established Premier League club, and so many happy memories. But in them days, Everton went away on the Queen Mary and as a pre-season tour. I went to America. They were away 6 weeks. And I always remember in those days that around Christmas, they would always be playing at Tottenham for some reason down in London. Well, they got the train. They didn't have the private jet and things like that. And sometimes Santa never came. And me and my, we're nearly crying, but Dad would come on the phone saying, oh, no, he's coming back. He will come because Dad wanted to watch us open our presents and just little things like that, because Dad was always away. He was always away playing football and earning a living. But what was amazing, they were on a maximum of £20 a week. And I always tell this story where my parents, and they told me this, went into the bank manager's office after. This is a Premier League footballer who's just played against Tottenham Hotspur in front of 58,000 at Goodison Park in the 50s. Gone into the bank manager. The bank manager has stood up and said, Jimmy Tanzia, I seen you on Saturday, Everton support. What a great game. We did well, so well. That was amazing, you know. And I think Everton won 2-1 at that thing. And they sat down and they said, got round to business, basically, and said, we've come here for a loan. And I think they were after £1,000 or something. And the bank manager, I swear his words were, that's all very well, Mr. Tanzia, but you need to come back when you have a proper job. That's absolutely true. Because in them days, you got... A list came out at the end of the season, and you were on that list or you were off that.
Mm.
Carlos, you're in. Jimmy's out. It was as simple as that.
So, Jim, who was making money in those days? 58,000 people, even if they were paying, I don't know, £5 each to get in. I mean, I'm not sure what they were paying, but someone was making money at that time in football.
I think it's called a board of directors in them days. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it certainly wasn't improvements on the ground. It certainly was not paying players. And, you know, I have to say, honestly, the one thing that came through at my father's funeral was he was a gentleman and he was never bitter. He always said, good luck to the boys now. I've had my time. It's their time now, which, you know, was great.
Mm.
And he enjoyed it. But that's how it was in those days.
So tell us about the influence your dad had on you as a footballer. Surely, you know, he'd walk through the streets of, of Liverpool and he'd be mobbed by people. Everyone would be talking about it. You would have seen this. You would have seen, the fact that, your dad was a hero amongst Evertonians out there. Did that influence you much? And did he spend much time with you learning how to play football?
Of course, my father was always there for me. He was supportive. He was, I'll say, hard on me. There were certainly no favours given. I remember in a schoolboy game about 15, just things that stick out in your mind, and my dad's on the sidelines. He didn't like going because he'd played and people wanted to talk to him. But anyway, I came off and I thought I'd done really well, you know. And he said to me, hurry up, I'll be waiting in the car, and if you want any advice, get a job. So that brought me back. That's just one of the occasions. But he was always there. He always had the football out in the back garden. And the advice I give to young kids now, you know, practice. You have to. It's no good. You have to have total dedication and want to make it and have the mental strength to make it, even at a local level now.
So tell us what that Liverpool team. I grew up watching that team in the 70s, and and the Toshack Keegan, you know, twin prong up front, and all, and then some of the fantastic. The atmosphere, we grew up obviously in Australia. At that time, as you know, Jim, it was state league. So they'd be playing on parks, right? Yeah. Then in front of, 20 people, 30 people. And I'm talking about Juventus versus Ringwood and all that, Jubilee Park and stuff. So when we get the big match and we suddenly see Liverpool versus Leeds or Liverpool versus Arsenal or whatever, it was a dream. I mean, that's the aspiration we all had, to one day maybe play in England because of that TV show. What did that Liverpool team mean to, your community, the Liverpool and the Merseyside community at the time?
Well, Carlos, I have to be careful here because Everton were quite successful as well.
Okay,
and,
there you go.
And also the families. It was very easy for me of which side I'd be supporting. But yeah, the Liverpool legend, and that's why, things have grown where we got 90,000 here. It all stems from the early 70s and that support that they, that aura that they created. Of course, you'll never walk alone. But if I can just say, I've been in Australia now 44 years, which I love Melbourne. I love this country. But it was so exciting growing up in Liverpool in them times. Of course, as my mother says, we don't just have the Beatles here. It's quite a good city. But it was so exciting. The music scene, the football scene, the clothes scene, if you like. It was lots and lots of fun memories for me. But definitely, because they were so successful and fathers around the world sort of said, you have to follow Liverpool, and their sons followed Liverpool, their kids followed Liverpool. It was exciting, and that aura that they've created still exists today. And having been fortunate enough to go to Anfield on a number of occasions, it is so stirring to hear "You'll Never Walk Alone" just before the kickoff, and it's amazing.
So how did it feel? Obviously, you're changing in the change room with the players on your trial. You're warming up with them. You're actually probably playing on the same side as some of these great players and against some of these players. Do you remember any moments? Did you take one on and beat them and get the crossover? Was it that moment you can cling on to for the rest of your life that you got around Emlyn Hughes and or you nutmeg someone?
As I said, mentally, I didn't feel I was strong enough. I was tough enough, being honest, and I basically played it safe, I think. But that's, hindsight's a wonderful thing, as we all know. And it wasn't till later, till I came to Australia, and there comes a turning point in your life, and I've had a couple. One was coming to Australia. Two was actually saying, if I really knuckle down here, if I look after myself, if I train and train some more, within the right context, that I could do something. And that took about 12 months. And if you like, I became a bit of a hermit, much to the laughter of my colleagues and things like that, but worked hard. And ultimately, the National League started being transferred to Heidelberg was the start of it, although, that was tough at the beginning. Then moving on to being selected, Tony Bodgie, lovely man. First picked me for Victoria to sit on the bench. I think Rangers, and I sat at a full house in Olympic Park and thought, I can do this. And ultimately, a few years later, I was fortunate to captain Victoria in quite a few games, which I thoroughly enjoyed, and captain Heidelberg and things like that. So, that's another tale. But
so how does an 18-year-old leave that, the glory of Liverpool, the music, the fashion? I can tell you really adopted the fashion. The way you look today, you look fantastic, mate. Fashionable. It doesn't make for good radio listeners out there, but this guy's looking fantastic. The fashion, the music, the lifestyle, I can just imagine the excitement around Liverpool. How does an 18-year-old leave all that?
Yeah.
Friends and family and football mates and stuff to come to Australia? And was it a football decision that made you come to Australia?
Yes, we played. As I said, I'd signed a part-time contract. I had two jobs, and I was cruising along fine. We'd go on holiday in the summer with the guys, to Europe. So I had a couple of jobs, no problems. However, if we were out on Saturday night, I think I used to borrow the £5 from mum on the Monday and give it back on the Thursday. We'd played a well-known non-league side in Liverpool in the prelim rounds of the FA Cup, We'd actually won 2-0. I'd scored a goal from a fullback. Left foot, I should add.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, the sweet left foot. Yeah. I remember that, that's for sure.
And then we were, you know, having a few drinks. We got the bonus in later, and a gentleman came up to me and he said, Jimmy Tanzi, you had a good game today. He said, have you ever thought about going to Australia? I'm like, yeah, great. You know, more interested in what myself and a couple of the younger lads were doing on a Saturday night at that stage. The game was over. He called me back on the Sunday and said, would you like to go? I said, yes.
So you didn't know this guy? He just approached you in the bar, did he?
Correct. Yeah. 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 And I said, you know, the details and things like that. And I'd said, yes, I'll go. And the surprising thing was he called me on Monday morning and said, right, your tickets are booked. Everything's okay. You're leaving on Thursday. We're talking 3 days then. I remember going into my mother and saying, Mum, I'm going away. She said, where are you going? London. I said, no, Australia. Being in mind, this is 70, just at 74, March 74. Instantly called my dad. My dad came home and there was a family discussion. And I said, I basically said, you're still hard on me. I can't make it as a professional. I'm leaving. And, you know, it wasn't bad. It, you know, I was always respectful and things like that. And anyway, I left on the Thursday. And boy, did that start a journey? Did that start a chain of events?
Did it actually help that Australia had qualified for a World Cup at that stage? And I'm assuming that the World Cup would have been played in June in 74 in Germany. And, of course, there was March. You say March. So
correct.
Did it help that all? And the fact that England didn't qualify for a World Cup for that one.
That's right.
But Scotland had a strong team.
Was that Poland? I think England.
Yes, Poland. Yeah, Poland. The famous goalkeeper. Tomaszewski or something. Yeah, I'm just really digging deep into the memory. But the fact that Australia had qualified for that World Cup, only one of 16 teams to get to Germany. Did that allay your fears a little bit about the football culture in Australia?
I noticed, obviously, that they had qualified, but not really because I didn't really know anything about the football culture. What I do know is that they'd promised to put me in a hotel for a month to help me get a job. I'll say that very loosely. Help me get a job and, you know, you'll be on your way sort of thing. Okay, great. We were picked up at the airport, driven through the city, and I'm noticing things like Hilton and like that, passed down Queen's Road there for these nice hotels and the lake. I'm thinking this is all right. We did a very sharp right into Fitzroy Street. Let me assure you, Fitzroy Street is not the cafe latte society it is today in the early 70s, and stopped outside the world-famous Regal Hotel. The less said about that, the better.
Yeah. And that's where you stayed for a month.
I stayed there for a month, yes. It wasn't a pleasant experience. And at one stage, I have to be honest, my father saying goodbye to me in Liverpool said, if you get in trouble, give me a call and I'll sort it out. Mm. That was it. That was his farewell message. I remember going downstairs once and the old red phones, the tall red phones, I picked it up, Carl, to dial the UK to say, get me out of here. Mm. And I did that because of the place I was living. I couldn't find a job. I didn't know. And I said, get me out of here. But I had no idea how to dial. What's the exit code? It was like a big red phone with 1 to 9 on it. Is it? Like, I just looked at it. Life-changing decision, put the phone down, which has been, you know, one of the best decisions I've ever made.
Absolutely, mate. You end up playing 43 times for Australia. Let's take a break, Jimmy. And when we get back, I want to actually talk about what you confronted when you went first to Melbourne Slavia, that team. And also, I mean, it's amazing. From South Liverpool to playing some of the greats of world football against Cosmos, playing for Australia. What a great story that is. We'll speak more about that after the break. This is Jim Tanzi on Club Socceroo here on FNR Football Nation Radio.
FNR Football Nation Radio.
Here's Aloisi for a place in the World Cup.
Club Socceroos with Carlos Alberto Diego on FNR Football Nation Radio.
It is a radio revolution, streaming football 24-7. It is FNR Football Nation Radio, Australia's first and only 24-hour radio station dedicated to the beautiful game of football. It is a Club Socceroo, and our special guest in the Club Socceroo Lounge is Jimmy Tansey. He played 43 times for Australia between 1976 to 81, Before we get to the Melbourne Slavia experience, when you first came to Australia, because of course that's the club you signed for all those a week or so prior in that English pub. the intro to our Club Socceroo had Tim Cahill, had John Aloisi, had Harry Kewell, and great moments. That's what we wanted to do in the intro. You would have been there for each one of those moments, I reckon.
Correct. Yeah, I've been fortunate enough in my job to certainly do a hell of a lot of travelling, which has included working at 3 World Cups, 6 Olympics, Commonwealth Games. Anyway, lots of sporting events where people consistently tell me I have the best job in the world. And I look at them and say, well, yeah, probably you're right. And so I'm not going to argue with you, you know. Yeah. I've enjoyed my job tremendously. I've been very fortunate. However, I can honestly say that I've worked very, very hard to get there. And the same as any football player getting to the top, any person getting to the top in business, it doesn't come easy.
Yeah, of course, your job that we're talking about is with Adidas, and you've been with them for 30 years, 30-something years?
Actually, 35 years in February.
So 35 years in this iconic football boot and sporting apparel company that Craig Johnston told me last week in a special Football Extra that nearly went broke in the 70s? No, probably early 80s
early,
or something?
Early, where are we? When I went to the Barcelona Olympics, we were like any company, we were going through a tough time. Mm. The banks were in charge and it was touch and go. So basically, coming back from Barcelona, we didn't really know if we had a job. Mm. But then we had Bernard Tapie.
That's right.
And a few of the other guys took over, and the actor, whose name just escapes me, his family. Mm. Anyway, turned the company around and to, you know, what we have today.
Yeah.
Business, as we know, Carlos, is very cyclical, and you have to keep digging in there. Same as anything, sport, life. You know, if you get knocked down, get up quickly because nobody cares about you. So get on with it.
And then Craig, was telling me about the Predator boot, how that helped the company sort of get back on its feet again. And of course, Craig was the inventor of the Predator boot.
The Predator boot, which we've just released again. The if you like the new model Predator version, which is great because there's so many memories about the Predator, football boots, et cetera. But, did Craig tell you about the night in the bar in Barcelona? Oh, no, don't worry about that one. No, he probably didn't. He probably didn't tell you where we solved the problem of the football world.
Okay.
And these are the things you remember when you walk away. And Craig and things like that. And good luck to him. I hope he's well.
Yeah. Now, of course, I was going to get onto the Melbourne Slavia. Now we're on Adidas, so I might just ask you this question. You're 18-year-old. A burglar alarm installer in England, playing for South Liverpool as an 18-year-old and forward, fast forward 35 years, suddenly you're an executive with the Adidas company travelling the world, going to World Cups. If someone had told you that at 18, would you have laughed? Would you have said, yeah, that's me, I'll get there in 35 years' time?
Carlos, people who know me will obviously say I don't talk about playing days or don't talk about who I've met and things like that, but I'm happy to talk to you in a relaxed atmosphere. But some of the things I've done quite honestly and where I've been, for example, kicking a ball, we were testing the World Cup ball in the Real Madrid training facility, which is amazing in the mountains outside Madrid. However, it took me about half an hour to get past the cars in the car park. The Adidas International film crew were there just testing the ball, for example, and I'm just, and that day before my knee totally collapsed, we're just having a kick about, and I hear this voice behind me saying, hello, mate, is that a World Cup ball? My very bad Londoner. It was David Beckham.
Oh, jeez.
So David, give us a kick. So me and David are doing a bit of
course,
kick.
He knew you, Jimmy Tansey. You know,
he used to play for Slavia and captain Victoria. That's the one, David. That's the one. Yeah, so we had a little kick about. He was joined by a couple of guys. I think one's Zidane and a couple of guys just knocking it. Come on, boys. Come on. You know, any opportunity for a young lad from Australia? So, you know, those are amazing experiences that you just do. And I've met David on a number of occasions. And all I can say is a charming young man, you know, and... God, it sounds like I'm name dropping again.
No, it's actually the truth.
Yes,
and this is not name dropping. It's actually opening up once in your life, Jim. Yeah. Tell us what you've done. Look, I think we're not probably even scratching the surface. I probably need other people who know you well to tell me who you really met and what you've really done. Melbourne Slavia, you get off the plane.
Yeah.
And actually, you're traveling class in luxury with the plane because you could have come over in the boat of those days too, couldn't you?
I didn't know the old jumbo jets went that far back, actually. I think it was 76B or something like that.
Yeah.
Squashed up for 24 hours. Anyway, but...
Was it your first plane trip?
Certainly my first long haul.
Yeah.
Yeah. The other plane trips had been an hour and a half to Mallorca, the then very quiet island of Ibiza or somewhere like that, you know, 17, 18 years of age.
Yeah.
So I'm there in the hotel, the Regal Hotel, completely zonked, fast asleep, woke up Sunday morning, hungry, thirsty. And I know there was an old pub in Fitzroy Street called the George Hotel. So, I'm pushing the door, you know, like I'm hungry. It said meal served. And this guy says in a broad Australian, you just got off the boat, mate. You know, and I went, no, well, we got off the plane, actually. He said, the pubs are shut on a Sunday. But if you go down there on the right hand side, there is a pizza parlor where you can get a drink and a pizza. I went, thank you very much. Stood there for a moment and went to myself, what is a pizza? That's absolutely...
They didn't 100%. Sell pizzas in England.
This is the early 70s. Yeah, yeah, yeah. This is like, I said to myself, what is a pizza? I have no idea. And that's another story. It was like going down, like, give me a pizza, but can I get a drink? Can I get a Coke as well, please? Australia has educated me. It's brought me up. It's made me realise. It's made me appreciate life at the same time. As I say, you have to work hard for it, Carlos.
And Melbourne Slavia, when you rocked up to their first training session, where was the training? Who was there?
The old Tuesday and Thursday night saga continued, rocking up to Orong Park, I think, in Paran.
Yeah.
And a coach there by the name, a wonderful man, and a dear friend by the name of John Sanchez, was there. And John used to play for Arsenal many, many years ago. And John was great with me. I think after 3 weeks, he grabbed me by the scruff of the neck, asked me what I was doing. Was I here to party or play football? That I had the ability, but I was a complete joke as any sort of professional. That was the start of me realising that I need to do something here.
So did John, obviously John had some part in you being signed, and so he knew that you were coming. I mean, obviously in those days, video. I mean, how do they know that you're a decent player?
This is the interesting thing. There were so many players that used to come over. And, you know, and then days, and I'm going back to the wog ball as Johnny and all the, you know, and if I'd had a dollar for every time somebody called me a pommy so-and-so, then it'd have been okay. But that was all part and parcel then.
Yeah.
And you came out, you got the job somewhere. I got a job for Wormhole Security, continuing my infamous career, and training. And we played every Saturday or Sunday, and everyone's saying, Hellas. And of course, when you played Hellas, you got the big crowds. When you played Alexander, and my first sight of the Ampol Cup of Hellas playing Alexander, I'm like, I want to play for them. You know, this team, and we played for Slavia in front of two men and a dog. But hey, that's the start, isn't it? That's the start. And I was there for 3 years. Won a couple of best and fairests, and then went to Heidelberg, the start of the National League. Myself, Jim O'Reilly, we got buy one, get one free.
Yeah.
So they bought both of us, and Heidelberg under initially, was it John Margaritis or was it Jimmy Adam then? Sometime. You know, I had a hard 12 months and eventually settled in, and I was with Heidelberg for 8 or 9 years, which I thoroughly enjoyed.
And the Socceroos, when did they come knocking?
Just after there was the World Cup, so they went in. Then the next thing was there was a tour of Russia. I think it was November 75. Russian team came over, and I made...
Was that Torpedo Moscow?
No, the actual...
Yeah. Oh, the national team. Yeah.
This would be... I'm thinking when I made my first game for Australia was in, I'm saying, November 75. Yeah, 75. And the Russian team came over, and the great Jimmy Rooney was playing. And, you know, Jimmy has become a close friend. He took me under his wing initially, you know, and these are guys you'd get on the team bus, and there's Peter Wilson, Atia Bonny, Jimmy Rooney, all these guys, and Peter Wilson, players like that. You know, it was great the way they treated me.
So you actually came in, of course, all these guys were legends. They'd just been to the World Cup. They performed really well as part-timers. They came back to Australia. I'm not sure these days they'd have a cavalcade through the middle of the city, but yep. I'm not sure what sort of a reception they got. So you broke into the Australian team with those guys.
Well, what happened, Carlos, there was like a squad of 20-odd and they played A and B team. The B team for Australia played against the state side of the, you know, Western Australia at first, and then they had a couple of injuries, and by the time we came round to Victoria, because somebody there, Harry Williams, I believe, got in playing with Harry, he got injured, and I was in, as happens. You know, I tell these kids, you might be third in line, but all of a sudden there's a suspension, there's an injury. Keep your head up and keep going, and I was in. So,
did you believe in, you know how you had that moment with Liverpool training? When you graduated from NSL to that level, were you fully confident that you can actually compete at that level? Had all that little bit of doubt you had when you were younger, had that evaporated?
It was going, and I think what helped me enormously was a coach called Len McKendry and Ronnie Smith.
Yeah.
Those guys who had a lot to do when the Victorian team came along, and then we started playing. So initially, Lenny opened so much, if you like, oh, that's how it works. Oh, but at the same time, you have to do this, A, B, C, and D. And we had a plan. We knew exactly what we were doing. And I went on to be captain. And as Lenny told me, once you think you're captain, don't start relaxing, because when you finally make it, you switch off. You know, and these, you know, Lenny had me up against the wall in the dressing room again, you know. So, but yeah, and when, I think, for example, Norwich came out, Martin Peters, of course, scored a hat trick in a World Cup, Jeff Hurst, but scored in the World Cup final. And playing consistently against top end players. And we spoke about Cosmos, we spoke about Rangers, we spoke about Dynamo Zagreb teams that came out. And playing consistently well. AEK Athens came out to a full house on a really wet day at Olympic Park. They shut the gates. You know, Gary Cole was on fire that day. Carl Gilder was on fire. And that was the most, I thought, complete Victorian team where I felt like I can do anything. And I think Gary was asked to go over to Greece for AEK to sign a deal, and I said, well, he wasn't sure. I said, well, if you go, I'll go. Because you were always there at that stage trying to play catch up. You wanted to be full time.
Jim, did you ever think then, I might go back to the UK? Because I know that I can play. I probably a little bit of a late bloomer in that respect, but I can play. Did you ever get tempted to go back and give it another crack?
I wanted someone to ask me, Carlos. I wanted someone to see that game against Norwich, to see that game. But in them days, it was so far apart. It was the tyranny of distance, if you like. I think, you know, I talk about Eddie Krencevich and John Cosmina, good friends, people know we have a laugh at that. He lives around the corner from me. These were the guys, you know, but at the same time, Eddie and John were full time.
Yeah.
And don't let Cozzy tell you he wasn't. Yeah. He had some job in Sydney, yeah. 2 hours a day, and then would go for a massage in the pool session, while we were on the building site sort of thing.
Yeah.
So, I guess I wanted to be asked at that stage.
Jim, let's take a break. And when we come back, I want to talk about Cosmos, that game against Cosmos, and who you met and some of the greatest players ever to grace the fields of football. You were on the same pitch as you that day. Let's take a break. And we're with Jimmy Tansey here on Club Socceroo on FNR Football Nation Radio. More after the break.
FNR Football Nation Radio.
Here's Aloisi for a place in the World Cup.
Club Socceroos with Carlos Alberto Diego on FNR Football Nation Radio.
Welcome across Australia. This is FNR Football Nation Radio. It is Club Socceroo, and our special guest in the studio today is the great Jimmy Tansey. Played 43 times for Australia between 1976 and 1981. Am I stretching this a bit, Jim? I'm not sure whether I'm getting those dates right, but
That's close enough.
Yeah, no, but you played a lot of games in that period of time, just quietly.
We did. Yeah.
And a series that I'll always remember is, obviously, you're always looking for respect in our sport, and I was always trying to sell our sport to all my mates who are AFL heads and rugby heads and cricket heads, and they didn't understand why Carlos Alberto Diego loved the round ball game so much. I didn't really understand either because, my dad was obviously from an Italian background, but I just sort of gravitated to it, and it was just a game for me. And when a lot of Australian kids played a number of sports, and I was included. I played tennis, I played cricket, I played footy, but soccer was a thing for me. Selling the idea of Cosmos coming to Australia and going through the list of players that are in that team, some of the all-time greats of the game. And I was so proud when I heard that they came. I'm thinking, okay, well, they might get 12,000 people at the game, and because people in Australia don't really understand, right? That's how I was thinking at the time.
Yep.
And then the stories, 52,000 people rock up to the showgrounds in Sydney and they had to lock the gates.
Amazing.
And you played in that game.
Yeah, that was, I remember getting the coach from the hotel and the coach got stuck in traffic. And all of a sudden you're thinking, wow, there's going to be a crowd here tonight. And before we'd got there, the news had came through, they'd shut the gates. They can't let any more in, obviously. We had a real tough time actually getting into the dressing room. And I was a bit relieved, actually, when Dennis Chua popped his head in, the famous Man City winger who I'd faced for victory a few days earlier. And he said, my hamstring's a bit tight, I'm not playing. I went, all right, oh, sorry about that. Because he was a live wire, and you could see how he'd played at the very top level. Mm. But a lovely guy as well. Mm. You know? So that was an amazing experience. You literally could not hear yourself talk. I think Tommy Cummins played that night. Tory played. Tommy did a great job in front of me, and we worked well together there. And you couldn't talk. It was just the noise.
Franz Beckenbauer. Who else was in that? Giorgio Canaglia?
Canaglia, yeah.
Yep.
Canaglia, yeah.
Yep.
I managed to get his shirt. I think a few of the guys there was about four or five guys around Beckenbauer that night, so trying to get his shirt or whatever. Niskens played in the Victorian game. I'm not sure if he played in the Australian game. But sitting with these guys after and, really relaxed, down to earth, enjoying life, that was one of the great experiences, besides the ones I've had in my job, but the ones as a playing experience. Just sitting next to Franz Beckenbauer, just having a chat and asking what's happening. And as I said before, he said he's got a flight to New York, then to Paris for some engagement and this. And he asked me what I was doing. And I said, well, I'm due on the building site about 9 o'clock and I'm going to be late.
But Jim, you've met some of the greatest players ever to play the game through your work and when you even played the game yourself. I don't know, in the two or three world greats I've sort of met fleetingly over the years, One thing that's really stood out for me is how humble they are.
Correct.
They don't need to tell you about themselves at all.
Absolutely.
In fact, they're more interested in you, and they think, why are you interested in me? Because I'm more interested in you. Is that what you found overwhelmingly with the quality of people, not only in football, but you've met some great people across all sports?
Absolutely. Mm. I feel, and you know, we're talking track and field, we're talking tennis, we're talking Olympic programs, football being the main one, but I generally find that the more people have made it, the more well-known they are, the more respectful and humble.
Mm.
For example, I used to speak and see Steffi Graf a lot in the early years, in the 80s, and her mom, and you would help. The most, she really taught me that you can be the world's number one and you can be a humble person, whereas some people who haven't quite made it, like, they want more and more. They're more basically drainers, as we call them.
Yeah.
And I can, after 30 odd years, I can spot a user a mile away.
And obviously being a company in Adidas that has their athletes that have signed with them, you'd get some who are more drainers than others. They'd be on the phone to you all the time when they talking to you about...
Some people I try now. Yeah. I've got no problem trying to educate them, if you like, our way, my way. Besides the company policies, then also, you know, it's no real point in phoning me on a Sunday afternoon because that's my day. You know, and if I'm out at the property trying to cut grass or the tractor won't start, I'm not really interested that you might need a pair of boots for the following week. Stage I do try and help them, of course. You have to be there. It's not a 5 day a week job, by all means. You know, Friday night we were at Amy Park as we look after Melbourne Victory, and we had an activation there, but it's demanding, if you like.
Now, Jim, you're a bloke who's played for Australia. You love the game of football. You grew up with the game of football. You love being Australian. You're here in this country, and you don't look like going back, mate. You look like you're so happy to be here. You run a company like Adidas, and for me, they're the qualities that I like to see in someone, you know, help run the game in this country. Mm. I'm talking about FFA level.
Yeah.
Have you ever thought, especially now, I think you're in the twilight of your corporate life?
I prefer to say the happy hour. and as we know, Carlos, happy hours may start at 2 in the afternoon or 6 at night.
So you're not in the twilight of your life. You're just twilight of your corporate life. Does it interest you at all to be part of the next evolution of people running the game in this country?
Carlos, let me say, previously... we've just finished, this stint was a 12-year Olympic program, if you like, which involved, I've been traveling, we've been looking after various sporting bodies. Now, in the last 6 months, I've started to think about it a lot more. And I, at the moment, you could say, you know, football is a passion, and I'll use the word football on this program. Mm. Football is a passion for me. I want to see the game improve. We can't stand still. If we stand still, the basic business, you have to embrace change, you have to move forward, which we as a company and personally, you have to do. And we appear to have stagnated.
Mm.
And fantastic what's happened in the past, and we've got the new league, and let's not stand still. We need to move forward, and that's we can talk about that another time. So I'm starting to think that more, and... I look at that, but, you know, at the moment it's very difficult for me because juggling work and if I'm going to do something, I want to make a commitment. I don't want to do it half-heartedly and I don't want to not turn up or whatever I should do.
I just reckon there's so many good people in corporate Australia who are football people. They've got all the qualities. I understand why maybe decades ago where we were an amateur sport and we wanted to professionalise it.
Yep.
So therefore, let's go and get administrators from other sports to come in and help us do that. But we're beyond that now. I'm running into people, especially with this FNR, we're interviewing people every day, intelligent people, great corporate background, and love the game of football. Just love it.
There's your hat trick.
Yeah. Oh.
Your hat trick.
And for me, they'll go the extra mile. if they get a dollar to do the job, they'll do $10 worth of work. Correct. And they'll be in it for the long term. I think it's time now that we have those sort of people, and you strike me as that sort of person. So, so Jimmy, what's been the highlight? We're nearly finished now, mate, but what's been the highlight for you in the 35 years that you've been in Australia and you've done everything you've done? It doesn't have to be your football highlight, just your highlight just generally in Australia.
My highlight was, I think, captain in Victoria for a number of games during a successful era, playing for Australia. And I guess my highlight was attending 4 or 5 World Cups.
Yeah, why not?
An Olympic. Well, I had to throw
it out. I've only done 2, just quietly.
not another World Cup final. Oh, yeah. Lots of things like that. We went over to Los Angeles for the Brazil-Italy game, which is a bit of a fizzer, but
yeah.
We're like, oh, yeah, let's go for the weekend. This is, Olympics, of course, Commonwealth Games, World Championships. Mm. Sitting with the Donovan Bailey, who was the fastest man in the world at the time, just having a chat about track and field, and also working with the years I did with the great EJ Whitten.
Mm.
And there's a man who, again, taught me to be humble, who was passionate about his AFL, of course he was, but he was also passionate about sport. And I remember him telling a group of children, and we were at the MCG, that, you know, their parents and the children, you enjoy any sport you like, because if you're playing sport, you're doing your schoolwork, then you're actively engaged all the time and you're too busy to get into any trouble.
Absolutely, mate. Look, I wish I had some more time, Jimmy, but we only scratched the surface. I reckon we're going to get you in again down the track. Perhaps in your next, because we're all campaign.
Yeah.
We're going to campaign for guys like you to be in the next load of leadership positions there at FFA. But thanks for joining us today, mate. It's
my
first real long chat with you, even though I saw a lot of you play the game and also from afar watched you in your corporate life for about a day. It's been a real pleasure having you in FNR today, mate.
Thank you. I wish you all the best, Carlos, on the program.
Good on you, mate. That's Jim Tansey, former Socceroo, played 43 times for Australia and just went on to have a fantastic corporate career and still is having a fantastic corporate career in Australia. Of course, that is the end of Club Socceroo for today. You can podcast the show on iTunes and SoundCloud. So until this time next Monday, may have a great week in football.
Club Socceroos with Carlos Alberto Diego on FNR Football Nation Radio.